Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and our subject matter today is one that we hear conversation about. What is that? It is domestic abuse. It is physical abuse in some various expressions. But our story today with our guest, Ateria Stevens, is going to be, I think, covering some other essences too. This subject matter, whether the abuse occurs to a male or a female, is not easy to talk about. Usually it's an extremely personal thing. Historically, most of the time, things like this are not even brought out into the light of day, because so often there's a feeling of shame. There is an attitude of victimization that paralyzes the voice of that person that has been violated. Also, it hides the responsibility and actions of the perpetrators. And I use the word perpetrators, the plural, for a reason. So, Ateria Stevens, her material, which is titled Don't Touch Me, is her personal journey, her personal story, through some various experiences, some of which we will share with you today, but how she took those experiences and have transformed them into something that is going to be far more meaningful for those who hear her story. Ateria Stevens, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're a woman of color, and
yes, ma'am.
You have taken, I think, a pretty big step. I'm going to share something with you for just a moment. I have known so many women of different ethnicities, whether they've been women of the Native American culture, the African American culture, Muslim culture, Caucasian, it doesn't make any difference. Their stories still have the same pain.
Right.
It's expressed in different types of experiences, but the pain is really great. Male or female, it has always been difficult for them, unless they've been in what they feel is a safe space, to tell their story. Ateria, why did you decide to write it out? I mean, this is not easy for anyone to do. Most of the time, we just want to say, it's got to go in the closet. Why did you choose not to stay in the closet?
Well, oftentimes, unresolved pain gets buried in your subconscious, so your subconscious never forgets, and as you go through life, that pain acts itself out in various issues, and that's what happened with me. I was in a place where I was unhappy. I wasn't growing. I couldn't figure out why, and I just stopped and asked God, why am I stuck in life? And I began to self-examine. And, I mean, epiphanies and revelations popped up all over the place as I was sitting quietly. And I just knew that the common answer for me was to go back over my life and look at it instead of running away from the pain. When I looked in the mirror, I saw someone just running from pain. And it was time for me to stop running away from the pain, run towards it. And I knew that the answers to that, why am I stuck, would be clarified in that search.
You have a sentence in the journal. You call it the Healing Roads Journal. The title of your
yes.
book is Don't Touch Me.
Yes.
And you say that this is the first one. You have got another one that you're wanting to write. But
well, it's a three-volume series, so I have already written the volumes. But this is volume one.
Now, let's talk about your writing this book. When you were writing it, and already you've said you've got three volumes. You did the first one. You've got your second and third, your outline and your plan ready to go.
Yes.
When you were putting this together, did you get any whiplash effects mentally, emotionally, and spiritually when you were bringing this out? I mean, how did you handle it? As you say, so many times we just want to bury it. We want to run from it. But nobody else can live in our own skins but us.
Right, right. And, well, recognizing that issues that carry over in your life is nothing but unresolved pain, thank God I was able to recognize that. When I began writing, it was painful to go back through those painful memories because my story is that I was molested by my grandfather, father, pastor, and five attempted rapes, got married, and my daughter, I discovered, was molested from the age of 6 months to 4 years old. Then 22 years in a struggling marriage, discovered that my husband had also been molested by the same minister who molested our daughter when he was a small child. So sitting down for me, writing and going back over those memories was as if I was reliving them brand new, just fresh again. But I knew that I could not run anymore. I knew that I needed answers. I sought therapy. I called the therapist, and I knew that there had to be someone who could answer those whys, because I couldn't call the people who harmed me and ask them why, because they're confused themselves, and I understood that as well. So I got into therapy long-term, and I was able to define psychological factors that describe why people behave in certain ways. Why? What's the motive of a pedophile? What's the motive of a rapist? What's the motive of someone who's verbally abusive? So those psychological factors helped me to at least understand why they behaved that way. It didn't excuse their behavior, but it helped me to come to a resolution where I was able to move forward and forgive.
I think that that is just a huge step. And I've had contact being a counselor and a minister with many different people through the years.
Right.
And I've heard the various stories that people have shared, like you are having the courage to share in your book. And I have to compliment you because, and also commend you for it, because I think when we can share our story, when we can speak out, then the blackness of fear, we have a chance to not only erase it from our own slate of experience and establish ourselves as the courageous spirits we are for having survived those types of things, but also it enables someone else to realize that they don't have to just swallow this, that there are those that will understand them. And
right.
I think that that is what your story is. Let's go back to something you said, because just hearing your words about how you have been violated so many times, this was in the family, and I don't know the percentages where the victims are so frequently, again, I'll say male and female. So often, it's not talked very often about the men have been violated, but we've just gone through a horrific public case with a university that something that was done so many years ago finally came out, and we won't go into that. But this started within your family. This started with someone that typically no one would ever suspect. That was your grandfather.
Right.
Now, this, to many people's minds, I mean, we all have grandparents, but that is something that someone would say, my God, didn't your grandmother realize this? Wasn't there anyone in the family that realized that your grandfather was a very distorted person?
Right. As I went back over writing and talking about it, I did discover that there were others who had been harmed by him, and usually that's the case. You're not the first one. And most times, sadly enough, you're also not the last one that a a pedophile has harmed. Most pedophiles begin their behavior in their teenage years, so there had been a pattern. But I don't know why it goes unrecognized or why people are in denial. I do understand the silent parent, the silent wife. I do understand that when that happens, that person that's silent is someone who's also holding on to unhealed pain and probably has been abused in their life and never dealt with it. And so, and I had to understand that in order to understand my mother throughout the course of what I had been through. So, but that's normally the case. And oftentimes, the average pedophile will molest over 600 times and get away with it. So it's like a normal thing that's happening. They ignore the signs or they don't understand the signs or don't expect. But he was a well-respected, he was a teacher, he was looked up to, served in the military, and no one would ever suspect this nice old man of being a pedophile. And it's hard to weed them out.
Now, when you went to your dad, and there's just a few things that we'll discuss, we'll try to get in our chat today, but your father,
yes,
you made your dad and your mom both aware of what had evolved with your grandfather, because you didn't want to,
yes,
be around him.
Right.
And you had a sister, and that,
yes,
sister, I don't think he did anything to her. At least I wasn't aware of it when I was going through your
material. Right, he didn't.
But you were the favorite, and this is something where, for whatever reason, maybe because you were the little one, you were the younger one, and he figured you wouldn't say anything. But he had,
right,
never bothered your sister. So there was something that was triggered here with him. Now, your dad apparently knew something about his own father.
Correct. Correct. You're very insightful to pick that up in the story. He did obviously know something, and I didn't make that plain enough in the story. So you're very insightful to pick that up. But yes, he obviously knew something. My suspicion is that he was harmed as a child by my grandfather. As I look back and examine some of the conversations and the anger that my dad had towards his dad before he forgave him, and the fact that he turned out to be a pedophile himself later on, points to the fact that somebody harmed him. And I believe that possibly his father was that person.
Mm-hmm. Now, when this happened, your dad did not want you to go over there anymore. What was
the positioning
of your mother? Did she see? I think many times parents have a tough time, and in our world today, there is so much, misconceptualization about,
yes,
what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate. There's so many things that are published, that are put on television, and I think there's a lot of confusion in the minds of a child. I mean, they honestly don't know what,
mm-hmm,
they don't know how to trust themselves. And if their parents will say to them, well, I don't care what you say, this couldn't be possible, that is really something that is quite bad. But your parents acknowledge it. How did your mother work with this?
Well, my mom stepped in and did what she thought was best, which was keeping us away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And because my dad was his mindset was, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to kill him. My mom talked my dad out of it by saying, we just won't take them over there ever again. And that was her way of dealing with it, just keep the children away. And we didn't go back over there again until I was married, and an adult. Then it was safe for us to go over there. I guess people often assume or hope that a person who has that behavior has changed for some reason, and especially when they're a close family member. And I did the same thing when it came to my daughter's abuser. And so because they were a minister, I hope that they had changed when we started back going around them. But oftentimes, if you don't acknowledge it and if you don't get help for it, you're still in that mindset and that behavior. And mm-hmm. so, but they did keep us away from them throughout our childhood life. There was anger and disappointment on my grandfather's side. He was never confronted. He didn't know why we stopped coming around, because he was never confronted. And so it just wasn't handled in the way that it should have, meaning that it should have been reported to the mm-hmm. proper authorities, mm-hmm. because that mm-hmm. stops the abuser from harming other people.
Well, I think when things are public, when stuff is put out in the open, then you have a chance, perhaps, to stop what I would describe as a fungal infection from
right.
spreading. Because your dad, not when you were little, but when you were maturing as a young
yes.
woman,
yes.
then your dad's behavior shifted.
Yes. He became very controlling, very strict with me. And it's funny because my sister, brother, and I share our childhood stories, and it's mm-hmm. as if we lived three different lives. We didn't come out of the same house. They had their experiences. They were... My sister was actually the youngest of us. I was the oldest.
Oh, I'm sorry. I turned it around.
She's 4 years younger than me. But she got to go. She was catching trains downtown. My dad would never let me get on the train and go anywhere, and I mostly had to stay on the front porch. I couldn't go swimming with the other neighborhood children. He was very, very strict with me. And but that controlling behavior was... I didn't realize at the time was part of that abuse starting.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not understand why he was so controlling. When I watched the story of the Jackson 5 family, I see their father very controlling, and it often reminds me of how controlling my dad was. And, I mean, with me, but he wasn't that way with anybody, with my brother or my sister. And my
mm-hmm.
brother was a year older than me.
Mm-hmm. And so there was this fixation that
yes.
created a very, very intense distortion. And
yes.
within you, then he was placing what you might say the fantasy, and then he started living out the very thing that he despised about his own father.
Exactly, yes. You're very insightful, Donna. He did. That's exactly what happened. As for me, and it was a struggle for me, and I share most of that in volume two, but the struggle was my daddy was this incredible father. He was very loving. He was a prankster. He joked. He often got caught in church imitating. He was sitting on the deacon's bench imitating somebody, doing a funny shout, waving to the whole church, and a whole church would be laughing, and the bishop would look over and catch him being silly. My dad was very silly. So when my dad started coming in my room at night when I was asleep, for a long time I thought that I was going crazy because there were no signs in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, one of the young ladies at the church who I was close to confided in my dad that her father was molesting her. After confiding in him, that kind of gave him a mindset to say, so somebody else is feeling what I'm feeling. Because right after she confided in him, that's when he began coming in my room and touching me inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that fantasy was there for a long time, unrealized by me. And as a child, I blamed myself for it.
Right. I think that that's very, very typical with most of the victims. I think that that is extremely
yes.
typical. Now, let's move forward into another level.
Okay.
And I know for some of you who are listening, this might be a very uncomfortable topic, but I think it is healthy when we can discuss these things instead of hiding. And every
yes.
culture has a different aspect, but so many of us today in the world of being open and communicative, this is something that has not been around, and even in the United States, for that long. And when you study history, you will study history and you will find that the role of the female, and even the male relative to this, but typically the female, mm-hmm. it is something where the female just has a terrible time being heard. There's often an attitude of, well, if you dressed in a red dress, you were just asking for something. If your body starts filling out as a woman and your breasts are developing, your hips are developing, your whole body moves differently, there's often that, and it's come so frequently through religious applications. Well, you are this, you are that, you are the other.
Right.
And the reason I say it is because I've heard so much of this through the years, and it angers me no end. It angers me because the role of the female has often been that of being no more than a piece of property. And
right.
there has been this sanctioned behavior on the part of the male and a dominion of attitude that it really causes me to get very, very agitated at times because I see it in cultures throughout the world, and it was here, and it has been here in the United States. It still is. And
yes.
it's time that women, like, and you have the courage to do it, speak up and speak out and say, wait a minute, let's get clear on this. Violation occurs when you do not give permission, when you force yourself, when you set up situations that creates an involuntary environment and a threat, a sense of shame, all of this. And you expressed it so well in your book. Now, you had an experience with a pastor of a church.
Yes.
And I can tell you that I have known women, including myself, that have in their own experiences gone through things of different nature. And fortunately, there was a way of working out of it, but it was only because of having some maturity. You were a young
right.
girl. This is an issue of trust. Was this
correct.
Pastor ever held accountable? Did anybody ever come out and talk about him? I mean, look at the priests of the Catholic Church, and this isn't just of any specific religion. It happens all over.
Yes.
These individuals hide behind a mask, and then they threaten. How dare you? You can't do this. And with courage, when people, male or female, and I emphasize this, come forth and speak up and speak out. What happened here with this pastor, and was he ever held accountable?
Never held accountable. It was amazing I didn't tell until later in life when I found out that another young woman who was a close friend of mine had also been molested by him. And it was then that we both said, well, we're going to tell. So we told the bishop's wife together. Surprisingly, she said we weren't the only ones to come forward and accuse him. And they would handle it, is what they said. We never heard anything. I know that he was then later, a short while later, ordained a bishop.
Oh,
over the church. And as an adult, writing my story, another young lady came forward and said, I too was victimized by him at the same place that you were victimized by him. And this was just about 4 short months ago when I heard her tell her story. He's deceased, and he died early, before he turned 40. Just like my dad is deceased. My dad died at 39 of a heart attack. But no one ever confronted him about it. If they did, we weren't aware of it. He continued to serve as a high-status, minister, bishop in the church.
I always find it so fascinating that people will say, well, we can't do anything about this, and they willingly will cover this up. They were willing.
Right. And that often happens in the church, just like you mentioned, the Catholic Church. They think they're handling it internally, and their way of handling it is to pray and believe that God will heal that person or believe that that person is healed and never really deal with the issue of why he's that way, you know, mm-hmm. or the need to confront him. Mm-hmm. And so that happens often. It happened with my daughter's and my husband's abuser. She, too, was a minister in that same church. We went to the church about it. Nothing was done. She continued to serve in the capacity of a minister in the church.
What would you say an individual when this occurs? What would you say to someone that would be a younger person? Maybe there's someone that's listening to the show right now. What is the recommendation you would make so that this can be worked with? Because the psychological, emotional, and spiritual mark on a human being is just very, very profound. And it can range from feeling guilty about, gee whiz, maybe I'm too good looking, maybe I'm not smart enough, because these perpetrators will often talk a person down. They will say, well, this is wrong with you, that is wrong with you, da 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 da. And so when you're young, and I've seen this done with adult men and women too, when they're younger, they may not know how to speak up. Maybe their life is threatened, this type of thing. But when someone becomes aware and they are wanting help, what steps would you recommend that they take, Ateria?
Right. Thanks for asking that question, Donna. That's very important for those that are out there struggling in silence. My hope is to give other people courage to come out of the silence. We share the same blame, shame, and guilt. I had to overcome that. But me having the courage to come forward is something that I'm doing and sharing and writing about to show you that coming forward stops the abuse. Abuse doesn't start or stop with the victim. It starts and stops with the abuser. So you have to stop the abuser. You have to report him or her, or else they will continue to harm other people. So I'm encouraging those and want them to know that it's not your fault. A pedophile has a confused mentality and a muddled feeling of misplaced love towards children. That person has a mental issue that he needs to deal with, or she needs to deal with, not you. So I want people, children who often blame or find blame within themselves, to understand, and even adults, that it is not your fault. It has nothing to do with you. And to encourage you to get the courage to step, come out of your silence, and because it's going to help you to be a stronger, better person. And it's going to help you to heal. And it's going to help you to not carry that over into your adult life, and where you may find yourself angry in life or not growing in life or not able to get past trust, having trust issues. I went through depression. I went through low self-esteem. All of that was healed when I got the courage to speak up and confront those. And that is what I'm hoping I am preventing now by encouraging you to come forward.
Ateria Stevens, your book, Don't Touch Me, is accompanied with a journal that you titled The Healing Roads. You also have a website titled thehealingroads.com. And
yes,
this is, I think, so important. And for anyone who might be listening, if you are currently going through an abusive situation, if you have a suspicion with a child that maybe is being harmed, don't go off into fantasy land with this. Don't go off into horrifying thought patternings. Seek out the counsel and support of those organizations, those networks of people who have had the courage, like Ateria, to say, we have open doors, come and see us. I know here in the Seattle area, we have some phenomenal, phenomenal facilities for people who have been abused, male or female. Oh. You'll find open ears and open hearts. It's in different parts of the country. Maybe someone listening You may live in a part of the country where that's not easily accessible. Find a hotline. Find someone to talk to. Because growth becomes vital when we recognize that our experiences are experiences, and we can take those experiences and make them into something positive and good. And that is what Ateria Stevens has done with her publication. It has taken a lot of courage for her to come out and to be able to talk from her heart about what she has gone through. And so when you can do that, then not only can you heal, but you can then be a light for someone else. Her website is thehealingroads.com. Ateria Stevens, I want to thank you for your courage and for coming forth. And I do hope you'll share your second book with me when you get it.
I'd be more than happy to. Thank you so much, Donna. It's been a privilege talking to you. I think you're awesome yourself.
Thank you very much, Ateria. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. More good things to share. Check out thehealingroads.com. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. The telephone number to call into if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you when you call in is your first name or your initial, and of course then after that you just And I always, oh, by the way, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And after that, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of importance to you. And I also want to bring up quickly, I know you just heard the ad on Pacific Northwest Women's Show. My goodness, that is coming up on the 1st of March, 2nd and 3rd. It's a dynamic weekend. But I also want to let you know that on March 1st, I'm going to be doing a women's forum. I have six dynamic speakers. This is a very eclectic arrangement of speakers. We're going to be talking about fashion. We're going to be talking about raising sled dogs. I mean, we're going to have all kinds of fascinating people there. So if you have a chance to come out to the Pacific Northwest Women's Show and go to their website, thenorthwestwomenshow.com, and you'll find out all of the details. But this is so much fun. I'm going to be in booth number 405. I'll be available for many consultations. I'll also be speaking at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. Quantum Mind, the genie, the intuitive genie within. So we're going to be, I'm going to be doing demonstrations and we're going to be interacting. By golly, I hope you'll put it down on your calendar if you're in the Pacific Northwest. This is just an incredible event. All designed for women. It's they are celebrating their 25th year. An awesome accomplishment, an awesome event. Put it down on your calendar. Check it out. and there will be information in the newsletter coming up. But hey, make a deal with yourself and some good buds and just take yourself and your buddies all along to the show. Make sure you got good walking shoes on, because I guarantee you, your feet are going to need a good massage. Oh, and they do have masseuses there, too. That'll massage those sore feet. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story with you that I think is just incredible. The natural phenomena, we all have heard about this huge, huge piece of rock, this meteor that hit Russia. And it was a brilliant ball of light, and with today's technology, people were actually able to film this burning mass of material that smashed in to that community in Russia. And, of course, they're seeking out bits and pieces of whatever it might be. And this is, you know, you have these different things that occur, and we're just flabbergasted by it. So maybe some things that occurred historically in the past, people didn't understand, were affected by a meteorite, debris falling from outer space. They didn't have satellites in the past. But in 1869 in Tennessee, during the month of August, there was a super heated cyclone. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Caffeine on line two, energy you're supposed to have.
Yes. Okay. We have a phenomenal situation here, and we have our wonderful guest, Dogs of War. Kathleen is with me, and Kathleen, I am so delighted we were able to connect.
Yes, Donna, it's great to be on your show.
Well, you know, Kathleen, this is something that when we're talking, this is President's Day, and you have written a phenomenal book called Dogs of War.
Well, thank you very much.
This book is incredible, because you have talked about you have so much information on these various dogs. Let's talk about Roosevelt's dog, Fowler. But before you go into that, I would love for you to explain why you decided you were going to write this book, Dogs of War.
Well, you know, I was inspired by the bull terrier in the book named Willie. And he belonged, of course, to General Patton in World War II. And I was looking at a book called Patton, A Genius for War by Carlo d'Este, and I saw the photo of Willie, who is mourning the general's death. He was lying by the general's footlockers and briefcase, and my heart just melted. And I thought, boy, if everybody saw this photo, their life would be better. So.
Mm-hmm.
The photo of Willie is what inspired me to write the book. And then I thought, well, I'd love to write about Willie and share this beautiful photo. And I thought that's kind of a short book, so I decided to include Fala, who I love, too. He belonged to President Roosevelt, as we all know. He's honored in a statue at the FDR Memorial in Washington, D.C., the most infamous of all the White House dogs. And then when I pitched the idea to my publisher after my first book was published, they said, well, how about add a third dog? And I thought that was a wonderful idea. And I, of course, immediately thought of Telek, who belonged to General Eisenhower, who actually got in a fight with Willie one time when the two generals were having lunch. I didn't know if I could find much on Telek except for that, but I did actually when I read Kay Summersby's memoirs, where she told many stories about Telek and how she and General Eisenhower had shared the dog. He had actually bought Telek for her, but because he didn't want people to talk about him getting a dog for his driver, they said it was his dog. So, you know, it's I really want to show the wonderful animal-human bond that they shared, these powerful World War II American leaders, and how these their canine companions helped make their mission so much easier. So,
well, Kathleen,
that's how it all came to be.
I'll tell you what. When I got this book, and my listeners know that our the SIBO family is very, very enamored of Scottish Terriers. And when the picture of this little Scotty sitting on a desk, he is not groomed in the standard way. He looks just like my Mr. Victor that is in the other room that is my buddy and my friend. And I just said, okay, I'm a sucker. I just absolutely love this little person. And animals have, dogs, especially with Roosevelt, Sala was so popular. This little Scottish Terrier just had a popularity that I think Roosevelt used to the hilt. And
absolutely. You know, Fala just really captured the heart of the nation. And I think Scotties have that ability. I think they're a great breed for the White House. I know President Bush had two very fetching Scotties. You probably remember Barney and Miss Beasley. And, you know, there was a story in the news about Barney's passing recently. It ends up on page 3, I think, in the Washington Post. I mean, it showed how he had captured the heart of the nation as well. You know, Barney, he had the Barney cam where they put a little camera on his collar and he'd walk around the White House. That was just, that was so endearing. And Fala just had a wonderful personality. The Scotties do. They're darling dogs. And I,
well,
again,
I know
I think
they're
great
they're
choice
like
for the White House.
Yeah, we often call them the dog cats because they are so independent. And
yeah.
They've got a mind of their own, and
yeah.
they are known for their stubbornness and also for their intelligence. But let's talk
yes.
about Eisenhower for a bit, because with Eisenhower, when he got this dog, it was, there is so much that's come out. Let me stop for a minute. You've got these beautiful photographs in this book, Dogs of War.
Mm-hmm.
And with Eisenhower, Kay Summersby, she wrote a book called Past Forgetting. But these
yes.
photos with Ike and this Scotty just absolutely are amazing. The photos of Kay. And it wasn't until many, many, many years later that the relationship between Kay and Eisenhower came out. And this was a very, very special association. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, excuse me, you know, the name Telek, you wonder, now, why did Ike name his dog Telek? Well, it's a combination of Telegraph Cottage, T-E-L-E, which is where he lived when he was, it was a cottage outside of London when he was, you know, serving at the headquarters in London. He lived there. And the letter K, which stood for Kay Summersby. So, you know, the name alone of the dog was ample proof that there was something very special between Eisenhower and Kay. You know, there's a rumor, and I didn't include it in the book, but he apparently went to General Marshall, his boss, and said, I would like to divorce Mamie and marry Kay. And Marshall said, well, if you do that, I'm going to make your life H-E double hockey sticks. Because he was worried about that might create a scandal and hurt the state of the nation. So Eisenhower pretty much cut Kay off after World War II. She was sent to Berlin, and she actually took Telek with her. Because technically, Telek was her dog, not Eisenhower's. She did try to see him a few times after the war, but he just was very cordial and aloof with her because he felt if I, you know, keep this going, it's going to be a problem. He certainly, you know, that was kind of an order from his boss. So it was a sad, sad parting of the ways. But, of course, we know he went off onto the White House and maybe was the First Lady. But, yes, I think I really, really admire Kay. She was an actress and a model, and then she, you know, gave all that up for the cause of the war and became and volunteered as a driver for General Eisenhower. And certainly, you know, very courageous woman and very strong, very devoted, very, you know, I really admire her a lot. And I know there's a lot of feelings that, you know, it was a bad thing that they had an affair, but, you know, this happens. And, you know, he did love her, I think. So.
Yes, and I think those stories are very human stories. And, of course,
yes,
he's, you know, he's passed on, so there's no disrespect here of the man, of what he's accomplished or anything else. But I would love for you to share the story about this phenomenal dog, Cairo. And he was a
Cairo.
Canine member of the U.S. Navy SEAL. Talk about
dog. Oh, yes. What a hero, you know. You know, actually, my father, Les Consolving, I wrote his biography before I wrote Dogs of War. He made the suggestion. He said, I've just read a wonderful article on Cairo, the dog who cornered Osama bin Laden, and why don't you include that in your book? And I thought, that's a great idea. I would never have thought of that unless Dad had suggested that. And I thought, well, put it in the afterword, you know, after the three stories of our three dogs, and this will bring the book up to date, you know, make it more contemporary, and will also be an opportunity to honor those military working dogs. And who would be a better example than Cairo, the dog who went in with that incredible Navy SEALs team and brought down bin Laden. I mean, you know, wow. He's the spokes dog for all the other courageous military working dogs.
Absolutely.
And you know, just a little note about the film that's come out, Zero Dark 30, they actually use a German Shepherd in that film, and he's only featured in one shot, which I really would take, you know, I was upset about that, because in the National Geographic film, they used a Belgian Malinois, which is what Cairo is, and he was featured in many shots, so I really would like to give credit to National Geographic for being historically accurate.
Well, the story is so incredible because these dogs and the Belgian Malinois is just a gorgeous, gorgeous dog. And they bring out how their sense of smell is 40 times greater than a human's. They train them specifically. There's very strong bonds between the SEAL owner and the animal. They're faithful. They're fearless, and they can be ferocious if necessary. And they're described as incredibly frightening and efficient attackers. But the way that they're trained, I mean, they have to know how to jump out of a plane. And someone may say, oh, you've got to be kidding. No, they do. They have to jump out of a plane. They have special body armor that's been designed for them. There's actual canine storm body armor and designed by a man by the name of Jim Slater, who was a canine handler on the Winnipeg Police Force. He designed it to protect his own dog in the mid-1990s. And Cairo was wearing one of those doggy suits when they went after bin Laden.
And that's right, yeah.
Oh,
and yeah, I mean, incredible. Belgian Malinois are actually used more in SEALs operations because they're lighter and more compact than German Shepherds, and there is just equally as intelligent. We all know how intelligent German Shepherds are, but they certainly equal them. So you know, that's I really would like to give credit to the Belgian Malinois. In fact, I spoke to a breeder. He owns the kennel, and they just have Belgian Malinois there. And he was upset that they hadn't paid tribute to to that breed in the Zero Dark 30. So, you know, it's very important to do that, to be accurate and give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely. I have to chuckle because your story of Patton and his bull terrier just totally is so funny. And how this bull terrier, I mean, I think of the horrific reputation that the bull terriers have gotten, which are, it's so wrong on so many levels.
Yeah.
But this bull terrier did not like, just absolutely was a runaway. He could be intimidated so easily. This was not an aggressive bull terrier, and he snored. And I just absolutely loved how you brought this warmth and personality of character about this animal into the forefront.
Oh, yeah, I love Willie. I wish so much that I had known him. I just, he has really changed my life, you know, because of that photo. But, you know, the beginning of the Willie section in the book, I wrote a description of the scene from the film, which actually is pretty historically inaccurate. Willie was very aggressive with other dogs, which I talked about later in the book. But the film, they had it was a very funny scene, of course. Willie cowering at a Pekingese who was barking at him. And actually, he would have gone after that dog, you know, with full force, which he did with Telek, Eisenhower's Scotty. But, you know, he was afraid of gunfire. He was, before he became Patton's, he would fly with his previous owner on RAF missions. And so I think the loud bombs scared him, because there's one funny story about Patton taking Willie to camp. And there was a German gun going off all night. And finally, Patton called General Bradley and said, "Brad, can't you knock out that German gun? Not that I mind, but it's driving Willie nuts." So, there's just wonderful stories. Willie was just one of the most charming dogs. I just absolutely adore him. And I would have given my eye teeth to have known him.
Now, Kathleen, what is the website that people can go to find out more about this fabulous book, Dogs of War? It would make an awesome gift for someone.
Oh, yes. Yes, President's Day, if you want to get haven't gotten it yet for President's Day, you could certainly give them a belated President's Day or any kind of birthday gift, or maybe this year's Christmas gifts. You can go to WNDbooks.com, and that has the superstore where you can order it there. And I think they still have autographed copies. And then, there's Amazon.com. I also have a Facebook page, Dogs of War, and you can like it and always, get updates on a regular basis. I actually put a little plug in for our show today, saying I was looking forward to our interview, and certainly a lot of people were very interested, so I'm sure they're all tuning in.
Wonderful. Kathleen Kinsolving, and that's spelled KINSOLVING. It's been a delight having you as a guest. Thanks so much for being
here. Oh, well, thank you so much, Donna.
And we're going to take a break for just a quick moment, and we'll be right back.
Hello?
Celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Northwest Women's Show, Friday through Sunday, March 1st through 3rd at Seattle's CenturyLink Event Center, where you'll find 3 days packed with fashion, fitness, food, and fun. Each day features life-changing seminars and, of course, shopping, shopping, shopping. Meet smooth crooner Philip Lomax from The X Factor. Enjoy live music from country music star Jared Neiman and others. Learn what the numbers can tell you about your future, from numerologist to the stars, Glynis McKinney. Gantz and get a peek at how the Ice Chip Grannies successfully navigated ABC's hit show, The Shark Tank. JCPenney will give you a heads up on trends for spring with fashion shows, and everyone loves those smoking hot firefighters. The Northwest Women's Show, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 1st through 3rd, sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, and BECU. Show schedules and ticket information at nwwomenshow.com. Sponsored by Snoqualmie Casino, Safeway, AARP, and BECU.
Hi, this is Donna. My goodness, our time has gone. You know, I'm going to have to finish the rest of the story about the cyclone, the superheated cyclone, and I'll be doing that with you tomorrow. And tomorrow, our guest, well, we're going to be talking about high tide on Main Street. This has to do with climate change and other such components. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'm so delighted you've taken time out of your busy schedule to share time with me. I hope you will join me again tomorrow. God bless. Have an utterly magnificent day. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.